Blog Talk Radio.
And this is Strategies of Success, and we will be talking to two people today. I have a co-host for this one because it's that special, and along with our guest. And the two of them have their own strategies of success, things that they do on a daily basis to help them achieve their goal. And we're going to ask you that you should be doing the same every day. Take that little step forward in order to achieve what it is that you are after. And be clear about that. So our guest today is going to be climbing Mount Everest. I've asked my co-host, who is Elizabeth McCourt, to join me on this. And that's for a couple of different reasons. She, one, will bring a different perspective on this than I have. She is an athlete in and of herself. She does some extreme challenges, triathlons. She also coaches different people. Coaches business people, coaches the athletes also, in order to help them achieve the best that they possibly can. And I'll leave you with one other question before I introduce our guest today, is that are you coachable? And take a look at the people that actually achieved some phenomenal things. And you would think, well, it's because they have this natural ability. Well, maybe they have some natural abilities. But in order to achieve and get the most out of there, do look for a coach. And that is something that you should be considering. Are you getting the help, assistance, and partners that you need? Well, today I do. And Elizabeth, before I bring on Don, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much, Brian. I'm really excited to talk to Don.
It'll be great. Same here. And so we are all now ready to speak to the Don that is going to climb a mountain. Not just any mountain, Mount Everest, the tallest peak in the world. And Don has accomplished a laundry list, and I mean a big-time list, of different things along the way. So Don Mann is a retired Navy SEAL. Don has started his own charity, which helps raise money and awareness for the military personnel. Don has also done adventure races, quite a few of them, has run marathons multiple times, back-to-back triathlon, which I think is phenomenal. Everything you're doing there is phenomenal. And he's going to join us today. And the one thing you should recall and know is that Don is leaving tomorrow morning, very early tomorrow morning on this trip. So, Don, my first question to you is, what are you doing here with us? How many times did you pack to get ready to go?
Oh, hey, Brian. It's nice to be on the show with you. And hello, Elizabeth. Well,
hi, Don.
My packing process, I started about a month ago, and I cleared out my dining room and got rid of all the furniture, and I put prayer flags all around my dining room, and I just methodically packed throughout the month. And once the gear I needed came in, I only packed one time, but I kept it all out, so I knew exactly what was going in every bag, and I didn't have redundancy of anything. And I'm very confident. I'm packed. I'm ready to go. So I don't have that worry, looming over me, that one additional worry. My packing and all the gear I need is that box is checked.
We mutual friend of ours, Tom Fabry, and he's climbed the highest peak on five different continents. I had the pleasure of being with him when he was packing for one of these journeys, and it is a methodical process to make sure that you have everything. Elizabeth, you and I go on vacation, we forget a toothbrush. There's always some place to get one. Don, you're packing completely self-sufficient along this entire process.
Yep, and I have two toothbrushes packed. They're both short ones. But, I've been on expeditions before, a number of them, and then my time with the SEAL teams, we went away for months at a time. So it's an enjoyable process, just knowing that when I open up my sleeping bag in the morning and I lean over to my left, that what I need is right there. And when I look over to my right, what I need is right there, and I don't have to go scrambling through, and everything's just how I need it and within reach and organized. And when I go to put on my boots, they're right there. And so I don't want to waste any time or energy looking for things or wondering what I might have or what I might not have. And then also, sometimes it takes a half hour to put on your boots. You're just not thinking clearly. And at base camp, you have half the oxygen you're used to breathing, and up at the summit, you have a third. So any place between base camp and the summit, you're moving slower, and you're not thinking as clearly, and things just have to be as simple as you can make them.
Elizabeth, would you translate that, you know, into, let's say, the business world? Certainly being prepared for absolutely everything is there, but there are certain times that we either react to something or we proactively do something. So this preparation, just like doing the triathlon, you know, when you're making that transition, you know, it's got to come to you as second nature. And Don, it seems like that's exactly what you have over here. But doing all those multiple adventure races gives you a lot of practice and a lot of opportunities to go and put that to the test.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Don, I love that. I love that you have the prayer flag kind of, you know, guiding you in your packing. And I wonder, I mean, as prepared as you can be, I mean, one of the things we all know about Everest is it's unpredictability. And of course, your body is strong, but there are certain unpredictable things. How do you handle unpredictability for yourself?
Well, you know, Elizabeth, some of the things that could happen up there has already happened to me in the past. For instance, I had frostbite on both feet, so sometimes I could step on a tack or a piece of glass and not know it's there until I hear it. And I've had hypothermia a couple of times, and I bonked where I just didn't have any energy at all and just laying there and couldn't move. I've had from due to you know, exhaustion like you would get in a long event. So I've had a couple of those things. The things, and I've had pulmonary edema twice, being up in the high mountains with pulmonary edema. But the things that, so I'm going to be very, very wary on those things. And a lot of times those things happen in the middle of races where we were racing and we weren't taking care of ourselves as best we could. But for this climb here, everything, I'm going to monitor everything that I could possibly monitor, stay as warm as I can. My new boots, I have heaters in them. I'm going to stay as warm and as hydrated and as nourished as I can. But the things I can't help are the high-altitude pulmonary edema, high-altitude cerebral edema, mountain sickness, crevasses and avalanches, hypothermia. Those type of things, I'm going to just beware. I know they can happen, but if they're beyond my control, I'm not going to worry about them because I can't. I can't do anything. And the things I can stay within my control, that I'm going to keep my thumb on top of it and make sure that anytime I start getting a bit weary or cold or something, I take care of myself as best I can. But the things I can't control, that's going to be part of the experience, and I'm just looking forward to it, whatever it is.
And I would say for you...
Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Oh, I was just going to say, it just sounds like, in addition to all the physical training and your experience, it's, I think for business people too, it's your mental strength that's really going to carry you through, particularly in this kind of extreme environment.
You know, and Elizabeth would know this better than anybody, but, you know, I remember doing my first marathon, and I did it as a non-runner. I just promised I'd put one leg in front of the other, and before I knew it, I finished the marathon. And then my first triathlon, I thought the same thing. As long as you just keep going and don't make any mistakes, you're going to finish. And that's how I got through my first Ironman. But I'm going to look at this mountain as the same way. You take a small, small step. You breathe 3 or 4 times up at high altitudes and take another small step. And every step is a conscious effort. And you got to stay linked into that line. And you can't make a bad step. It could be a fatal step if you make one wrong step. And, you know, it's a 10K. I'm looking at it as a 10K. It's 6 miles up. And I'm just going to go one step at a time, and then it's a 10K back down. And I know we're going to do the mountain numerous times. You go from base camp to camp one, back to base camp, and then base camp to camp two, back to camp one, back to base camp. And you go back and forth a number of times. But we have 2 months to do it in. And we're going to be very acclimatized because it's going to be a slow 10-day walk up to base camp up at 17,500. That's a nice, slow process, and that's only to get acclimatized. And then we'll have a lot of time at base camp just breathing that air, that thin air there at 17,500, which is half the oxygen. And they're so thorough on the way they get the teams to acclimatize, like climbing high, sleeping low, climbing up to camp two and sleeping at camp one. Climbing up to camp three and maybe coming all the way back to base camp to get his strength back. And it's a they are very well thought out process. And most people don't have a problem with the altitude. It's just difficult, but most people don't, you know, they just suffer, but they make it up there and make it back down.
You know, Elizabeth, you brought up a good thing with the mental preparation, the mental thought process of the whole thing. And I'll go back to something that Tom had mentioned to me when he had climbed Mount Aconcagua, is that his tent mate had a mental problem. He became very, he lost his confidence, is really what it was. It was an issue on the mountain, and he lost his confidence. So, Don, how well do you know the other teammates that you're going to be climbing with? Or do you really just get to know them when you, you know, begin the journey and meet and go up to base camp and spend the time that way?
Well, you know, so the only thing I know about the other six people, one's from Peru and two are from New Zealand and two are from Australia and one's an American, but they've all been vetted through adventure consultants, which in my opinion, and I think a lot of people's opinion, adventure consultants is probably the most reputable Everest climb guide service up there. They're the ones who created the whole sport of Everest climbing, you know, for non-100% mountaineers type people like myself. So they vet the people, and if anybody's seen the movie, Guy Carter, who was on the other side of the mountain, he came over and helped with the rescue in 1996 when all those people were killed. But he's the one who runs Adventure Consultants, and I don't think there's anybody on the planet more knowledgeable than he is. And when I sent him my resume and my bio, and we talked for about an hour on the phone, I couldn't be more convinced that he was the guy I wanted to do this with. Plus, I followed his career for the last 20 years. And so the people he's vetted, I have full trust in his vetting. And because he won't take somebody like a lot of the non-as credible agencies, some people just take rich people's money and they'll say, we'll get you to the top, and they get there and you're eating the same meal every day and you're not really have the guide service or the Sherpa support you need. And a lot of those people have big problems. But adventure consultants, they've got a solid reputation, and they're not going to pick one or two people to be on a 6 or 7 person team who can't keep up with the majority of the team and lessen their chances of making it. And that's how these agencies crumble. And they've got their reputation to stand on, and I have been following them for over 20 years. They're solid.
Hey, Elizabeth, if you talk to companies about their branding and what they should be seen as, that testimonial is the testimony that any business, you know, would certainly love to have. And, you know, the trust in their employees, themselves, their leadership, and identifying, in this case, who their customers are, who they are going to do business with. And it is so important because you are entrusting your life and with him and the company and also with the other climbers. So going into it with that kind of confidence has got to be a great starting point. And obviously you will get to know everybody very well as you continue on this climb. And this is a dangerous thing. I mean, the failure rate on this thing is not a number to ignore.
No, it's not. A few years ago, the state, you know, the stats were 1 out of 10 people who summit perish. But you compare that to K2, and it's 1 out of 3 who summit don't make it.
Wow.
But as far as the climb goes, an 8,000-meter climb, and there's 14 of those in the world, anything over 25,000 feet. As far as those 8,000-meter peaks are concerned, Everest is not one of the hardest. It's not considered difficult compared to some of the others. And one other thing is people that I really look up to, for instance, Reinhold Messner, he wouldn't waste his time going up Everest the way I'm doing it. He would think it's too simple because there's Sherpas and there's ladders already in place and there's ropes in place and there's tents that the Sherpas already brought up there. And Reinhold Messner, in his opinion, he wondered why people would do a climb that so many people can do. His last time he went up Everest, he did it solo and without oxygen on the north side of the mountain. Didn't even want a radio because he didn't want to be supported in any way. He didn't want to be able to call for help or call his girlfriend saying, I miss you or anything like that. He wanted to be him and the mountain together alone. And so So that's the extreme, I believe. And a guy like him who would go up to K2 or go up some of these other peaks solo without oxygen, to me, that's extreme mountaineering. What I'm doing, it's mountaineering, and I'm 58 years old, and to me, I'm picturing this as something that's within my reach, but I don't want to go beyond that. For a goal, for me to pick a goal, that's about as high as I want to go right now. But I believe my whole entire life I've worked up to achieving this goal. I think I prepared myself basically nonstop since seventh grade. And I have a long list of things I plan on doing after this. But right now, with Everest being the tallest, and it does take a toll on your body because you're on that mountain for 2 months, I'd like to do that now rather than when I'm older.
You know, it sounds like what you're talking about is exactly what you were referring to, you know, when you just posted something back in January, last January, about the things that people often ask me. And it was about how should I train to become a Navy SEAL, an Army Ranger, or a Marine? And it was that constant moving forward, you know, the constant daily improvement. And you have been living that each and every day.
We have a saying in the SEAL teams, when you become a SEAL, you get this big gold pin that you put on your chest called the Trident. And it's the largest medal in the military. And it signifies sea, air, and land, which is what the word SEAL comes from, the acronym SEAL. But we have a saying that you should earn your Trident every day. So guys who are in for 4, 10, or 20 years or something, and they, instead of them saying, yeah, I was a SEAL, I did all this tough stuff at one time, but now I'm resting with my laurels and not doing much, instead of doing that, I just firmly believe, and a lot of SEALs think the same way, is earn it every day, and every day keep pushing yourself and do something hard and something, you know, significant and something you can be proud of. That's just how I'm going to live. That's how I'm going to continue living for the rest of my life, and I've always lived that way.
Hey, Elizabeth, it seems like Don is very coachable if it's that constant improvement.
Right? of course, yeah. I mean, I love that you said that, Don, because I love that attitude of, you know, trying to do the best that you can do every day, and earn your Trident. And one of my questions for you was, obviously, the ultimate, of course, is to make it to the top. That's the pinnacle, making it to the top of Everest. And sometimes, you know, it may or may not happen, and it may not be anything to do with your personal ability. It could even be weather. But I'm wondering is how are you going to measure your success or your Trident every day while you're up there?
Well, you know, Elizabeth, I think I'll have a log book. I have a log I started already. And I'm going to list down everything that happened in that day, you know, the days I can sit and write. And I know after the first day I'll have 59 more days to write about. And the next one, 58 days. And I know in 60 days I'll either have summited Everest and got down safely or I won't. I know there's so many things beyond my scope or my realm that I could have any control of that can stop me from getting up there. Reinhold Messner has climbed some mountains 5 times before he eventually summited. And I know there's so many, you know, the last 2 years on Everest have been disasters with the avalanche and killing 14 Sherpas. I was going to be on that climb, and my friend lost all his Sherpas that day.
Wow.
There are a lot of things that can't happen, that could prevent you from getting up there. But I have to be careful not to get too upset for the rest of my life if I don't summit. And if I don't summit, I have to make sure I know it's not because of my willingness not to. It's because something beyond my control happened. But I'm worried about that. I know real mountaineers know that's part of the game. And there's a saying, you know, getting down safely is mandatory. Summiting is optional. And so I have to work hard at adapting the philosophy that, you know, there's a chance I'm not going to make it to the top. But every morning I'm just going to think, I just have to do everything right. It's going to hurt a lot. I welcome the pain, whatever it's going to – I don't care how much it hurts. I want it to hurt. I know it's going to hurt. If it's worth doing, it's going to hurt. But I just have to make sure every day is just done the best of my ability. And then I know I have 58 days left, and then I'll keep counting down until the end. And I'm just I've been doing a lot of visualization, and with visualization, I think it got me through SEAL training a lot easier than if I hadn't done visualization, because every day in SEAL training, I'd get back to my room, and I'd think, you know, today was a hard day, it was challenging, it was difficult, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be, and I'm glad it wasn't harder, but it wasn't as hard as I thought it would be, because I kept visualizing how bad it could be. And that's what I'm doing with Everest. And I've been doing that with Everest. I started a number of years ago, actually, what it would be like. But I'm just picturing the cold and the wind and the sickness in your stomach and the chest pounding and the headaches and all that that come with it. And but you know, my biggest fear, and I don't want to sound negative, but my biggest fear is, you know, there's over 200 bodies up on that mountain. And sometimes people do collapse, and when they collapse up high, my biggest fear is, as a former SEAL medic and as just American and a Westerner, there are times when you have to walk by those people and you can't help them, because if someone stops to help them, then it's two people who perish instead of one. And that's my biggest fear, having to walk by somebody that you're unable to help. That's my biggest worry right there. And I hope that doesn't happen. I don't want that to happen. I'd like somebody, somebody to follow, that I was able to help them. That would be what I'd like to have happen.
Right. Yeah. So with, and that was so much the situation on that Aconcagua climb, is that they had found out news that they were going to be passing a couple of people that had perished, one of the key factors that really hurt Tom's tent mate. And Tom became the motivational guy in that respect. And that's where, you know, something comes from. Knowing who your teammates are, you're going to be relying on these people. You know, you mentioned about the crosses. You're tied together. You know, if somebody falls and falls into it, you're relying on everybody else to make that just a moment, you know, and not a disaster. So it's incredibly important to know who your teammates are. You know, you're talking about success with this. Obviously, you know, the great success would be a climb, making it to the summit, coming down. Everything's great. It's a beautiful thing. But some of the other successes that you wanted to see come out of this was the continuing of raising awareness for some of the causes that mean so much to you. So can you take a moment or two, and please take a moment or two and explain that?
Sure, Brian. Well, And I think Elizabeth will totally understand this too. But when you spend, you know, many years and, you know, decades of your life just working out and racing, if you go over a certain point, I kind of think it's a selfish thing, because you're not helping other people necessarily, and you're not really helping or being there for your family or spending other time on just your own self and self-goals and things that make you happy, and which is good, I know, to a certain degree. I know I've gone beyond that point where I just got so obsessed so many times, and I just let everything else drop and just got too involved in the sport I was doing. But I was worried about that for Everest, and I know, you know, this climb's costing $85,000, and it's taken, you know, I'll be gone for 70 days. And so it's a huge amount of time and money and commitment. And really, I could take that $85,000 and give it to a charity, actually, right? Or I could go help at an orphanage somewhere. So I didn't want to. I just do it because it's a goal of mine and something I wanted to do and something that just drives me. I wanted to do it for a bigger cause. And the cause that I have a lot of causes I'm concerned with. I love, you know, helping animal rights and especially children and St. Jude's and things like that. But the cause I decided to support was all the veterans coming home wounded from Iraq and Afghanistan, because our country's not prepared to deal with that. The VA hospitals weren't set up to have an ongoing war for over 15 years, two wars, and have all these people coming back, missing limbs and PTSD and all that. So we can't just point fingers and say the VA is not taking care of it, the VA better take care of it. I think as people who enjoy all the benefits of living in this country, we owe it to those vets who came back. I'm in one piece. I'm fine. But there's so many people who went over there and came back who need help, and our government's not set up to help them. And so what I want to do is to tie this climb in with, because I know it'll get publicity, and thanks to you, Brian, and shows like this, it gets a lot of publicity, but I want to tie it in with raising awareness for our veterans. And so every day, outside TV, my charity called Frogman Charities, Gala Wine, my sponsor, and a number of other places are going to be sending out a link. And we have two people in the PR marketing field who will be getting my links and the Everest links daily from Everest, and they're tying it in with a story about a veteran or a veteran charity. And it's going on the frogmancharities.org Facebook page and the Facebook, it's facebook.com/frogmancharities and the website's frogmancharities.org. Those two places are where we're going to post updates. And there's a GoFundMe page, and the GoFundMe page is up there as well. And what I want to do, I'm going to devote the rest of my life to I'm still going to do things, goals of my own, but I want to tie it in with helping, you know, something of a bigger cause. For instance, helping the vets. And that's what I tied this climb into.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about is 100% the case. And the way that you're doing it is right, and acknowledging the fact that, sometimes, and Elizabeth, I'm sure you work with a lot of people with this kind of thing too, I need to build up confidence doing something, so I will go out and just accomplish everything on my own. But at some point in time, that on my own really should be looked at, where it could be, become selfish. But if you're raising awareness, raising funds, bringing other veterans along with you, either in face-to-face along with you or virtually bringing along with you, that really is something special. Elizabeth?
Yeah, no, I totally agree, particularly with, endurance events, and I totally hear you, Don. It can be very all-consuming and selfish and feel narcissistic. And then when you're doing it for someone else, that day that you wake up and you're not feeling so hot, you say, well, I can do it for this guy. And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. Like you can take that next step because someone came home and can't anymore. So you're just giving it a higher purpose for your own motivation and hopefully to really spread the word and inspire people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think it does. I mean, the first time I ran the marathon, I didn't run it, and no offense, Don, but I didn't run it because of the front runners. I didn't run it because of those people. I actually ran it because of the folks that were taking 7 or 8 or 9 hours to do it. And I thought that was just unbelievable. If they could do it, I could do it. I was smoking at the time, all that kind of stuff. But, that was really amazing. So you, with your connection with the military, is going to inspire people that you know, and it will probably inspire a lot of people that you don't know and you never know. The way it was explained to me one time is that we're all boats. And we leave a wake. And sometimes we don't see the people in our wake that we leave, that we just pull along with us. So it's great. It's absolutely fantastic, what you are doing. And we've definitely followed it along. So that'll be great. We'll do it the Frogman Charities, certainly through Facebook, and share any of this journey that we possibly can. I want to thank you for allowing us to be a part of that. And Elizabeth, for joining us today. It's great. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us on this program.
Oh, thank you, Brian, and thank you, Don. And I wish you every success on the mountain.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. And hopefully we get to train somewhere together.
Yeah, that'd be fun. And have you? Are you planning? I'm curious on going to Bodanath before you set out. Have you been there to the stupa in Kathmandu?
I've been to Kathmandu one time. But it was kind of a rush trip, and we did do some sightseeing, and some tourism, but we didn't. We just rushed it, and I didn't get to see that. I hope
it's sort of maybe a superstitious to some of my climber friends to go to Bodanath and just circle the stupa for good luck on the climb.
They are going to have the Tibetan monks are going to have a prayer for us. They're going to give us two prayers, one before we head out up on the mountain and one on the mountain. They're going to give us a prayer, ceremony of some sort. But I'll be taking pictures of that, and I'll send them back.
And we certainly look forward to seeing all those breakthroughs, Don. Without a doubt. Hey, we'll do everything we can to, you know, to keep the whole world informed of what it is that you do as you reach for the top of the world. So thank you so much for joining us, especially the fact that you're leaving in just a few hours. The one thing I ask as you go is, will you come back on after the trip when you come back to the States?
Yeah. Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Absolutely, Brian.
That's when we get to, you know, the before and after, and then we'll follow along with everything else. So, again, thanks. Thank you, Don Mann, for joining us. Have a great journey, a successful journey, and most importantly, a safe journey. Elizabeth McCourt joined us today. By all means, you want to go and follow her along, too. She does a phenomenal job. She's got a great background and, you know, working with people that are looking to achieve everything and doing that balance, you know, between confidence and a clear set of goals and being coachable. You got to remember that being coachable thing. If you really want to achieve what it is you need to achieve, you need to understand that you can be and should be. So let's go with the three actionable ideas over here. One, prepare. The preparation that Don is going through, that we all go through on different things, is so important because that does lead to the confidence that you have in yourself, in your teammates, and everything that goes along with it. You know, one is understand exactly what those limitations are. Some things we can control, some things we can't control. But you do need to go forward confidently and understand what you could do, and sometimes you just need to leave it to our third thing, and that is faith. You know, you have to have the faith in yourself. You have to have faith in your teammates. You have to have faith in the folks that are leading, in this case, an expedition, leading you forward, guiding you, coaching you, whatever that may be, depending upon your situation. It's been an absolute pleasure. We do look forward to speaking to Elizabeth and Don, and Don after he returns. And my name is Brian Cohen. This has been Strategies of Success, and figure out your strategy for success and go after it. And just take that little step each and every day, and you will achieve your goal.
Thank you, Brian.